Hello, welcome. This is Someone to Take the Edge Off. This is my podcast. My name is Liam. Today on the show, we have Nick Sun. About 10 days ago, I did my friend Brent Watkinson's gig, Laughs on Tap, and on the lineup was a guy called Nick Sun, and I'd never heard of him before. And he turned out to be one of the best comedians I'd ever seen, and having been a really intense comedy nerd prior, I was confused as to how I'd never heard of him before. And when I got home, I looked all over the internet, but I couldn't find that much. Just some poorly filmed YouTube clips, but like nothing I could really purchase. And so I found him on Facebook and I messaged him and I said, oh, hey man, I really like his stuff. Where could I buy it? And he responded and said, oh, actually, I don't have any like recorded stand-up, but here are two ebooks. And I was so confused as to how he could be so good but have nothing available to listen to. And I said, yeah, thank you. Thank you so much for the ebooks. And then a few days later, I was getting a lift home from work and I was telling my friend driving me, I said, oh man, there's this fucking crazy good comedian I never heard of. Just came out from nowhere. Do you reckon I should ask him to be on my podcast? And I was real nervous. And my friend was just like, yeah, well, of course. What do you have to lose? And so I asked him. And he was like, yeah, fuck yeah. And he was leaving in a few days at that time. And I was like, oh, shit. What about this day? What about this night? What about this fucking, what about this time? And we scheduled a time, locked it in. And it was like a few days from that point. And I was like, okay, cool. And then I had a nap on the floor because I was moving house, didn't have a mattress. And then I got a message and he was like, actually, do you want to do it right now? I was like, oh, fuck. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Cool. Yeah. Come in 45 minutes. So I spent 45 minutes just nervously writing out some questions / conversational topics. And every time I read them back, I just thought, oh, these aren't good enough. But I had no time to really do anything. I was freaking out. I was thinking, like, who do I think I am? I'm just this kid in comparison. I'm going to be talking to this fucking dark comedy lord, Doug Stanhope endorsed fucking veteran of really good bleak comedy in Australia. But he turned up. And he was a really sweet guy, and we had a great conversation. Yeah, it was really good. He has a show coming out for the Melbourne International Comedy Festival between the dates of the 29th of March and the 23rd of April, and it's going to be really good. It's going to be good. I'll put all the links in the description. And you should also check out his blog at www.medium.com/@NickSun, NickSun. But yeah, this is episode 2 and I hope you enjoy it.
I don't know. It can be approached from so many different angles. It can be like a craft, or it can be a business.
Yeah.
But I think when it's an art, it sounds pretentious, but definitely, it helps to be slightly on the spectrum.
Yeah. No,
you know. Right. Otherwise, you know, what do you have to say that's interesting?
Yeah.
You know, I'm a well-adjusted human being. What's the deal with that? No one really cares about that. It's boring.
Yeah. It's interesting. Like, you kind of need the stage, though, to pocket that sort of and put that in a to shelve it in some way. Because like if you're it's just in general conversation and you're, I mean, you can talk to comedian people, you can say whatever you like. But if you talk to sort of regular other, you know, more conventional people, then it's sort of, I find that you always trip up. Like,
yeah, they get freaked out.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't just be like, how are you? Oh, I'm so morbidly depressed. I want to kill myself. It's just they're going to just run away. They're like, okay, well, that's too much information.
Yeah, it's really, it's rough. But I mean, that's I can't do small talk for sure. I mean, I tried just before talking to you in the kitchen.
Yeah. No, that was all right. I just thought you were high or something like that.
I got into my first Uber the other day and the woman just said, like silence for about, you know, 7 minutes of driving. And then she just sort of almost nervously was like, oh, it was warm when the sun came out and then it was cold when it was gone.
Yeah.
And that's a quote.
Yeah.
And I said, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. No, I don't blame them, you know. Damn. The others. That's a healthy way to frame things.
Yeah.
I'm getting better at small talk, but... Actually, but yeah, I know what you mean. I mean, who gives a shit?
Yeah, yeah.
Who gives a shit? Especially the weather for the day. Like, I was around outside. I don't need to know.
Yeah,
what it was.
For a long time, I fought it. I tried to be the weird, deep, fucking weirdo. And like, when people at work or in just general conversation, you try and fight the small talk, and you try and tell your whatever. Yeah, the deep. I'm going to kill myself. I got depression. All that sort of stuff. And yeah, it does not go down well. Like it really.
I have friends who can
wedge it in.
Can wedge it in. And even now I'm learning, like my act, I feel, used to be like, let's just get as weird and dark as possible, fast as possible. And now I'm realizing the benefits of like just easing into it.
Yeah, that's very interesting because I've watched a lot of your, like, because when I asked if you had any stuff to listen to buy albums, DVDs, whatever, and they were non-existent. I scoured YouTube for like what I could find of you, and then I found that like maybe 3-4 years ago you're a lot more fucking like brutally sort of fighting the audience in a sense.
Yeah.
And then now seeing you, meeting you, it's almost like exactly what you're saying, you're easing into it.
Well, I sorted out a lot of my mental issues. Like before, I was too mentally ill.
Yeah.
And now I feel like I sort out a lot of things and I worked out why I was doing certain things. And also just getting older.
Yeah.
And also like sick of getting the same reactions. Like I was just like, you know, I'm kind of tired of them hating me and feeling alienated.
Yeah.
You know? Not that I want them necessarily to like me if they're terrible crowds, but
yeah,
I should at least give them a chance, you know.
Yeah.
And also I just suddenly realized that a lot of people, they're not actually that bad. You know, I mean, I'm being more forgiving. I've done a shit ton of ayahuasca. That's kind of helped me recently. And they're not that bad.
How long were you hating people?
Well, I realized like this year, like literally it's been in the last month since I've shifted towards like, actually let's try and be friends with them. Like I got to a point where I was just like, I'm just too tired to hate. It's a lot of energy to hate and to be angry.
Yeah.
And then also I realized that I was projecting my childhood shit onto the crowd. I know that sounds like bullshit pop psychology stuff, but I was like, I got like, as a lot of comedians get teased a lot when they're kids. And I just realized I was projecting stuff from when I was 7 onto these people.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my God. Like, I remember I was just sitting thinking, I was like, why do I keep having this? And then it just kind of popped in my head that I was like, oh, I see the faces of the people who called me names.
Yeah.
When I was in primary school. And I was just like, what?
I feel like you would have commented on that in the moment.
I have done that previously and they just go, oh, it's not funny. It's funny now that I'm telling you, but they're just like, oh.
Yeah, yeah. It's a bit rough.
Yeah, and I'm like, they're not those people, Nick. And you're not 7 anymore. You're 35 and maybe you should catch up a bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that kind of was a big shift.
So when What made you want to do stand up?
I don't know. I guess it's a combination of like neediness and arrogance.
Did like, you think that at the time prior to?
I remember I was 10 years old and I was watching stand up on TV and I was watching the guy and I thought to myself, I'm funnier than this guy.
Yeah.
And then I kind of repressed it for a long time.
Mm.
Like probably like 7 years. You know, it was bubbling. It was like I was gay, but I didn't want to come to terms with it. You know, I even had like a coming out story to my parents where I like burst into tears at the dinner table.
I do stand up.
And I was like, I want to do comedy. And they're like, oh, okay. But,
what did they say?
They're like, are you sure? And then I was like, yeah. And they're like, do you want to get some kind of backup skill or something? They're pretty practical people. They're like, you know, illegal immigrants coming from a pretty harsh country. So,
yeah.
So then I did it. And they were kind of unsure at first. And then I won some awards. And they're like, all right, it's okay for this guy. And then 10 years passed. And now they're worried again. Now I'm worried.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. And what was the first gig? I'm really curious as to what your initial material was. Like, you don't have to say any of it, but like, what was the topical?
There was, you know, it was a bit of race, a bit of death. And yeah, it's pretty much what I talk about
nothing's
now.
Nothing's changed.
Nothing's really changed. That's a depressing thing.
No, I think that's good.
Yeah.
To me, that's good because I, for some reason, I would have assumed, the opposite, that maybe it's slowly developed into a...
Well, now I'm actually realizing that thing about small talk. I am actually doing stuff about mundane every day, which is pretty funny because usually you get comedians who start off being Seinfeld type guys and then they go dark. And I'm realizing now I've gone the other way. And so I figured by the time I'm 55, I'll be just doing like family jokes about fucking buttering toast or something.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So you even thought, even prior to doing stand-up, you acknowledged it as a selfish, like self-centered type activity.
It was at first, but now my sort of aims have changed a little.
Yeah.
And I do believe it actually serves a function of, you know, sounds pretentious as shit, but like, you know, being a mirror I'm veering more into like social commentary or psychosocial commentary, whatever you want to call it. So yeah, it still is selfish. Well, it makes you selfish because you live in, it's a selfish lifestyle.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to be more. I think before my material was just about me and my feelings, like some kind of fucking dirty emo piece of shit that I, you know, was a very vital phase of my growth. But now I'm shifting to like, oh, there's a world outside of me. Maybe I should comment on that.
Yeah.
And I think it's a good way to put forth non-traditional perspectives.
Yeah. I like how you're saying all that, but you're still very reluctant to call it an art form.
It can be an art form.
It can, and it cannot?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, we've all seen magic acts, right? The guy's just paying his bills. And there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, it's the business side which keeps comedy probably the most unpretentious but annoying art to fucking practice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I find it the most sort of satisfying or just easy to digest in that, like, it's so simple in that you're just trying to get a laugh and the laugh is the answer to the problem where, like, if you talk about music or visual art or theater or something, it's like there's lots of gray areas of like what was I meant to feel there or whatever, like, and did it really resonate with me? But if you laughed, you can't lie when you laugh.
Yeah.
Like it's a reaction you don't really control, and so that's why I like it. But
yeah, well, that's the good thing and the bad thing about it, you know.
Yeah.
Like, to be honest, that's why I decided to, well, I haven't made it yet. I've made like 7 prototypes and they all suck of my podcast, but it's really just a backlog of thoughts and ideas which aren't stand up.
They're
not funny enough to be stand up.
Yeah, well, that's perfect.
Yeah,
that's exactly what you're looking for.
Yeah, exactly. So
it's not. It hasn't been released.
It hasn't even been made. You know, I've spent the last week. I'm like, I got to make it, and I'm just talking to myself out loud in a room.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dude, just that's all you need. I feel, I'm so, since seeing you, like, it's been like a week now, I'm so fucking confused as to why you're not fucking, like, I haven't heard of you years, and you're really good. Oh,
thanks, man.
It's blowing my mind.
I've started getting my shit together only recently.
Yeah, so. Are you just really unorganized? What's going on?
What is going on? I suck at all the life stuff.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to get that together this year because I have to because I'm sick. I'm sick of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I fucked up a lot. I was doing way too many drugs in my 20s. I was probably mentally unwell from ages 24.
Yeah.
Also, I got a lot of success early and that made me think, oh, everything will just come to me.
Yeah.
And then it did for a while, but then I couldn't capitalize on it because I didn't know who I was. Yeah. I still don't, but I'm getting better at not knowing. And then, and then also I took the last 2 years off because I was just like, I burnt out pretty hard.
Yeah.
And had to do some non-comedy stuff.
Yeah.
But that was actually probably the best thing I've done for a while.
Mm-hmm. What is the trajectory? Like, all right, so I've done stand-up for like a year and like a half, right?
Okay.
And I feel, yeah, that's why I'm nervous to talk to you because you're like, I feel like a fucking, like a child.
Oh, no, no, no. But like, I'm just a person.
No, I know. I can see.
I'm house-sitting right now. I have not much money.
Yeah, no, yes, but that's all, it's weird because I've been describing to regular people, I've been telling everyone about you that I know, like people that wouldn't necessarily have any interest in like stand-up or whatever. And I'm describing like, it's so hard to describe really dark jokes. And I'm like, that's, you guys don't understand. Like, this is really like beautiful. Like, this is really good. I can't believe this guy exists. Underneath the wraps.
I can't believe I exist either.
Yeah, well, I mean, neither, but like, I'm just very surprised, that's all.
Oh, thanks, man. That gives me faith because I spent the morning beating myself up.
So. I was sitting in the Pooh Bar gig where you did the trial show for the Melbourne thing that you're going to do, but we talk about that a bit later.
Yeah.
But yeah, I remember I was sitting in the front row and I was like, fuck, I wish, I was so envious of how like, jaded and raw like you were and like the material that you had was just like that is the, like I don't know if you're a fan of who are your comedy heroes if you have any or who did you like
in the beginning. I loved Bill Hicks and Andy Kaufman.
Yeah nice.
I don't really think Andy Kaufman's like a trad stand-up
comedian,
but I really liked how he fucked with everyone.
Yeah
and then I guess just most of the American guys. You know, Mitch Hedberg, Doug Stanhope,
mm-hmm.
Dave Attell,
yep.
Mark Maron, Rick Shapiro, Daniel Kitson, Phil Kay.
Did you have those heroes initially?
No, it was mainly Hicks at the beginning.
Yeah.
And yeah. Oh, well, I know, that's really what made me start doing comedy because I saw some Bill Hicks video in university.
Yeah.
And it was in like a...
What do you remember?
It was Relentless.
Yeah.
No, it was Revelations.
Mm.
And it was for a university thing, subject. And it was on the big screen. And really? he made the whole Christian Bible study group walk out. I was like, wow, some guy can make that happen from beyond the grave. Who is this magician?
And then, that's amazing.
Yeah, so then I was like, oh, okay. I didn't realize. Then I was like, oh, maybe that's what I want to do.
Yeah, wow. Most of those guys you mentioned, they've been my, well, I don't know if heroes are the word, but favorite comedians as well.
Mm. And Louis C.K., of course, and Bill Burr's, you know, all those guys. They're, you know, your standard guys, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. Before doing stand-up, I think I'd maybe... I wanted to do it for ages, but the person that, when I saw Doug Stanhope, I was like, yeah, like that's the goal. Like that's the whatever. And like I've often thought in my head, like if I write one joke of any of the same quality of any of his shit, like that would be a good life lived.
Yeah.
Which I don't know what that, like, what do you think of comedy now? Like, would you tell people to do comedy?
No. Because I need the stage time. No, you can if you want. But I've realized that if you're destined to do it, you have to do it.
There's no...
And yeah, like I tried to quit for 2 years. I thought I was done. I honestly thought I was done.
Did you tell your parents?
Yeah. Yeah. Basically, yeah. And they were like, okay. And then I quit and I thought I was going to do this. But I just realized there's nothing else I can do.
Yeah.
I'm just doomed to do this.
But do you still, you like doing it though?
No, no. Now I'm realizing how important it is to me.
Yeah.
Like I want to do it now. Before I had a lot of blocks, but now I think not doing it, I don't know. It's really complicated, but it's, I had to change my relationship to it a lot.
Yeah.
It's like this weird girlfriend thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And actually Hicks said that, and he said it's, I can't remember what he said, but it was something like basically saying it's sometimes been the bane of his existence, but sometimes it's also saved him.
Yeah.
And, yeah, that's right now it's helping me. Because it's the sole anchor point to my shapeless existence.
I see, yeah. You've been talking a lot about being in the Tarkine.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk about
what
you were doing there?
Yeah, it's good to not talk about myself. now I'm going to talk about myself doing something else. But
no, yeah. I want you to. I want fucking people to know
that
you
man.
Exist.
Oh, thank you. Well, okay. People know I exist.
No, but more.
Yeah, I'm working on that. This year, I have to change. I have to.
Yeah.
Yeah, so... I don't know. I kind of grew a social conscience the last 2 years. I was way too self-centered.
Mm.
In short, this is what my Melbourne show's about. Basically, I did ayahuasca and that completely shifted me and made me realize I was a self-centered asshole. And that's the reason why I was so depressed. And so I went and did volunteer work and that completely changed me. And then I came back and I was like, oh, I got to get involved in something, which is not me, you know? Mm. And... So I started getting into conservation because I was doing a lot of human-based volunteering and, you know, people can be really difficult. So I was like, oh, I just help trees and animals. That's more kind of my line.
What sort of stuff are you doing?
The volunteer work.
Yeah.
The Nepal earthquake, I was doing earthquake relief work.
Yeah, wow.
I didn't mean to, just the earthquake happened the day before I left.
Yeah.
And then I was like... Honestly, I was too lazy to change my plane ticket because it cost too much money. And I was ready to go.
Yeah.
So I was like, I don't give a shit.
You nervous?
No. This sounds terrible, but I had the time of my life. And also it just put into perspective all my fucking petty problems at the time, which have since come back with a vengeance.
Yeah.
Exactly. But yeah, I was literally just lifting rocks for like... 5 months.
Was it fucked up? Was there depressing situations? Were there?
Yeah. I mean, it was just really full on, but you develop a pretty sense of humor helps.
Yeah.
But, I came in, maybe a month after, so I didn't see any of the really fucked up shit, but I mean, I saw like entire towns which were completely leveled. Jeez. And just nothing worked. And I was like, okay, now I see the benefits of living in the West. You know, you have clean water,
yeah.
There's healthcare, stuff works.
Yeah.
But there, like, nothing worked.
Yeah.
You know, you couldn't drive on any roads because they were completely destroyed. The government was corrupt, so you could never get anything to happen.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it was a mess.
Yeah, wow.
But it was really exciting.
Yeah.
It was kind of like, I was like, wow, this is an adventure.
Yeah. How long... did you do it for?
Probably about, I did like a 3 month stint and then maybe another, you know, maybe 6 out of 8 weeks.
Yeah.
With different little groups.
Were you thinking any moment, like at this point were you like, I'm stopping doing stand-up for a while?
Yeah. I literally thought this is my new phase of my life. I don't know what to do now. I thought maybe I could be a writer. So I wrote all this shit about volunteering.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I didn't know what I was going to be at that point. I just thought that it was dead. and I just was following the advice of a plant spirit because I realized any direction I'd given myself had sucked. So, yeah, I thought I'd trust a plant.
And of all the drugs, ayahuasca seems to be the most positive outcome that I've heard. Like,
well, as medicine, if it's done right with good practitioners, I mean, it actually made me stop doing all the other drugs and stuff.
And it's quite, from hearing it, is it almost painful, an experience?
Yeah, I mean, it can be. Sometimes it's amazing and you're just cradled in the arms of love, some kind of universal, you can't really say this without sounding like a dirty hippie, but some kind of cosmic love dude.
Yeah.
But then other times it's like just punishing, like you just confront all the shadow shit that you've been repressing.
Really?
Everything that you never... Yeah, the first one I just saw all the times I'd wronged women, but from their perspective. Stuff I didn't even remember.
Oh.
And I was just apologizing and I just felt like a fucking piece of garbage.
What sort of like, describe what your senses are picking up in that sort of moment? Like, are you in a dream sort of state?
Yeah, everyone's different. Like I hear a lot of things. Some people just get straight up visions and stuff, but I get like, sometimes I just hear voices like, sometimes it's my inner voice that you can't hear a lot of the time because of all the noise and your own shit. And then sometimes it's the plant spirit's voice and sometimes it's other spirits' voices.
Yeah.
And then also you'll just be replaying situations like a life review sort of thing. And you'll be seeing ways you've behaved that were not in line, or you'll be hearing, getting impressions of what you need to do next or what kind of health advice you should take.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So do you recommend it?
Yeah, I do. It's not for everyone, but I recommend giving it a try once. And if it works for you, well, it can really save people's lives.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, nice. So you did the volunteer work.
Yeah.
But then how did you venture back into doing comedy?
Well, then I did volunteer work. Then I went to America for 6 months and I was really confused. Originally my plan was to go and do stand up in America. Yeah. And then after I did the ayahuasca, 2 years ago, with the intention of how do I become a better comedian, and it told me to quit, which was quite funny, really, and to go back and do volunteer work and find my roots and shit. So I was in America. I was like, fuck, maybe I should just try it. And it was like I'd keep going to these comedy rooms and you'd have to put your name into a hat.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'd just be sitting there praying that my name didn't get called.
Didn't.
Yeah. And as soon as my name didn't get called, I'd be like skipping and high-fiving myself outside. And also I kept on having these weird dreams where I'd be on stage doing stand-up, except I'd get on for like 10 seconds and do a Larry David, like, I don't want to do this, and then and get off. Like, that would happen every week.
Wow.
It was like a recurring dream. And so that's what happened in America, and I spent like 2 months in L.A. working illegally in a Mexican-run sushi joint, trying to work out whether I was supposed to do comedy, like going to these comedy rooms every night and being glad not to get on.
Yeah.
And then...
But you went on occasionally?
I went on like four times, and one of them was really good, and then one of them was really sucked, and then, but I wasn't ready to go back. And then I did ayahuasca again in America, and it just told me, just don't force it. And so then I was like, yeah, fuck comedy. And it kind of just, it was a really interesting experience. It basically dismantled all forms of my ego identities, including myself as a comedian. And then after that, I just spent 3 months hitchhiking and hanging out with all manner of strange people in America. All sorts of weird hippie, new age, survivalist type people. And not really thinking about it. And then I got back to Australia. It's going to sound like I'm a weird ayahuasca freak. Did ayahuasca again with the intention of how do I make the world a better place?
Yeah.
Sorry, I just heard myself say that. And then it said, go back to doing comedy. And I was like, fuck, really? And then it took me 2 months to get back on stage. And then I had a dream that I was on stage yelling at the crowd, do you really think the way we live is sustainable? And then I just started getting up again and started slowly getting it back.
Wow, I can't believe it's a lot of direction from ayahuasca.
Yeah, I was really fucking lost.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not your standard trajectory.
Yeah, I was going to ask, like, what even is the standard trajectory of, like, a comedian in Australia? Like, is there even...
If the comedian is smart and, like, practically minded, he does the shows. He does material that is general.
Yeah, yeah.
And well-liked. I don't know why it's he. Could be a she as well.
Yeah.
He talks to the people who runs the rooms in a friendly manner.
Sounds so simple.
He does a few competitions maybe.
Yeah.
He goes out and, you know, he talks to the people running the show. I don't know. Actually, I have no idea what the fuck they do. I don't know what they do. They seem to possess some kind of natural survival instinct.
Yeah, wow.
That knows. It probably helps to know what they want.
Yeah.
And I have no fucking idea what this, that's. And sometimes they're lucky, and they get an early break.
Yeah.
And they capitalize on it, and then that's it. And then there's the other guys who stay in the trenches for like fucking 15, 20 years, and then their moment comes.
Yeah.
And yeah, that happens as well. Those are two typical trajectories. The guys who get an early break and they're smart enough to know how to handle it.
Yeah.
And the guys who just put their head down and stay in the trenches for 20 years. And then the time comes.
I thought that possibly I had... You seem slightly familiar, but I couldn't remember where from. And I wondered if maybe, like, you'd ever been on the Doug Center podcast or something.
Yeah.
And I found it. And I was like, yeah, I've heard this before. And I listened back to it the other day. I was like, very interesting that you mentioned... And I forget who the other guy was on it.
Oh, Elwood, yeah.
Yeah, he was talking... You both were talking about how, like, comedy in Australia is sort of... It's... I don't know if you'd use the word small, but, like, they're more of a hobby-based thing.
Yeah.
Because there's just less of it to do, really.
Yeah, on some level, yes. But also me and Elwood, we make a lot of excuses for our fucking failures. You know, we're both... you know, shit in the same respects at, you know, taking responsibility for our lives. But it is true. There's not many gigs, you know. I mean, yeah. There's stage time is the only way you get better, and there's like limited stage time. Like when I was in England, there's like, you can do 3 gigs a night, you know, all within walking distance of each other. In London.
Yeah.
I was doing that for like 4 years, and then there's like, I think, I don't know, there's shit tons, like 350, 400 rooms in the whole of UK.
Jeez.
A week.
Yeah.
So, and there's just, it's a big country here and there's just not many people. So it's, of course, it's going to be small. But I have to say that the comics I've seen in Australia are by far more original than a lot of the stuff I've seen overseas.
Yeah.
But that is because, but then they just get to a certain point and...
There's
nowhere to go. And that's just the same for the music as well.
Yeah.
Music scene here, it's just like, yeah, it's kind of sad. I've seen a lot of guys like, fuck, you're really awesome.
Yeah.
And they just drop off. And I don't know why. Sometimes it's because I wonder if it was more friendly where they stayed on. And I think it would have been, because I've seen in England there's a huge middle and then like, a huge bottom, but there's a huge middle, you know, like I could make a living there.
Yeah.
Wasn't amazing living, but if I'd stayed there. It's
doable.
Yeah. It's doable.
Yeah.
But here there's a huge bottom and then just a small top.
Yeah. I think maybe it's the most interesting comedy I find is the very niche, very strange stand-up comedians. Like the ones that wouldn't conventionally like.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if you've ever seen a show called like, Stuart Lee's something.
Comedy Vehicle.
I don't know if it's Comedy Vehicle, but it's the one where he showcases like about six maybe less, like four comedians. They do like 10 minutes each. And he's like, he's found these people mm. and they're not necessarily like, they're very unknown, some of them.
Oh, okay.
And then he shows them and they're like, and gives them that. And Stuart Lee's already not like that known, mm. but like he shows these people and it's absolutely like incredible. Like
Wow, I got to check out that show.
Yeah, like that's, I think maybe the problem is, or the main thing that you would work towards is finding your fans.
Yeah.
And if you could find them, yeah, like that's how I think sort of people like my favorite comedian, like Doug Stanhope, like I reckon if he's found his fans somehow, mm. I don't know how you do it.
Well, yeah, I never really made an effort, but now I am trying to.
Yeah, well,
why do you think I'm doing this podcast?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I want that to happen. I want.
Yeah,
that.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it'll happen. It'll happen. It has yes. to happen. I've had too many fears of me being like a 6-year-old bitter failure this week for it not to happen.
This week,
today actually. but I've been jumping on my house sitter's trampoline, and that shakes those thoughts out of my head.
I like that you were very, but you know, I really, really wanted to talk to you, and I was like, for a second, I was like, I wonder if the fact that this podcast has a theme of existential dread that might, you know, scare, and I was like, what the fuck am I talking about? Like,
no way.
That's the fucking pool. Like
the pool of especially comedians.
Yeah,
I mean. But I've realized existential dread is when you have too much time in your hands, you're not being constructive, and you're just sitting around letting the thoughts ricochet in your side of your head and gain velocity. And
yeah, then that's
everything gets blown up into this huge fucking scale of what is this all about. And that's what made me realize when I went and volunteered for the earthquake. I was like, oh, it's just about picking up rocks and putting it in a hole. And it was such a fucking relief to my brain.
Mm.
That I was like, oh, it's that simple. You just go help people.
Yeah.
Just go help people who aren't you. And then you'll stop thinking about yourself and what it all means.
You think maybe that's why comedians have existential, I don't know if they do have more, but maybe they do because they have a lot of free time to just sort of sit around and think about shit.
I think that's why a lot of artists, you know, comedians and rock stars, they have too much free time in their hands and they either get severe drug problems or sex addictions or, you know, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
It's just to fill in time. But I'm getting better at just trying to navigate out of those holes.
Do you remember, like...
But having said that, there is a sense of, like, actually, if you have enough free time...
Yeah.
You end up pondering the cliche big questions.
Yeah.
Because what else are you going to do? You run out of shit to fucking ponder about. You're actually, well, what is the point of this?
Yeah. And there's no answers, so freak out a bit.
Well, I realize now there's no answers intellectually, but there are acts.
Ah, yes.
So if you just do something, just do something, then you feel better.
Yeah,
sounds really glib,
but it's true.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and you know, for a lot of comedians, you're operating through your intellect primarily. So, yeah, you can definitely run into some icebergs.
Do you remember your first existential crisis?
I don't know. No, I think it was somewhere around my 20s. It was, you know, it was from the ages of maybe 22. Like, I had no job.
Yeah.
To like 30.
Yeah.
I didn't have a job for 8 years.
Yeah.
And that was just one long existential crisis. Also, I was doing a lot of acid. And that doesn't help.
I think you've hit on something that, if you have a job, it's very hard to have an existential crisis.
Yeah. Well, that's why I think people secretly, they're thankful for their jobs.
Well, they don't know. They maybe don't know that it's something that it's distracting them enough so that they don't have a lot of free time to sit around and go, well, what does it all mean? I'm fucked.
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
Because it's very interesting. Yeah, I'm talking to, like, I've had periods of not having jobs, and like that's exactly when the most intense, dark existential points come. And then like I've had one so far, I think. I've had one, and it was so intense that like I couldn't fucking really, I just felt really arrogant. Like I felt like I knew shit. I knew shit because I'd walk around and see everyone and be like, how are you?
Yeah.
How are you? What?
That's the first stage. Yeah. And then I'm realizing now I don't know shit. And even if I know shit, they're probably more constructive citizens than I am. So I know what you mean though. Yeah, the arrogance.
Yeah.
There's no end to it.
Yeah, and then eventually it sort of subsides. Like you either just get through it through some sort of distraction, doing something selfless. Although in the vortex of it, you don't, when someone says maybe you should try and help some people, that sounds sort of insane. Like,
yeah, when you're in the deep rut,
yeah,
it's hard to get out. I know what you mean. It's like trying to swim up a whirlpool. So I think your only option is to bottom out and to get sucked out the other side.
Mm.
And
what does that involve, do you think? Just being more depressed?
Surrender. Complete surrender. And then, you know what? Eventually you're like, you just get sick of it.
Yeah.
You get sick of being depressed. Yeah. Like, I used to be really pessimistic, but it's really depressing being pessimistic. And I just was like, I just got sick of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, yeah, just, again, I don't mean to harp onto them, but plant medicines can definitely help pull you out of a rut.
Yeah.
But not all the time. But, yeah.
For some reason, I just assumed that you would have had multiple, when I say existential crisis, I think of it like as a real intense, like not sort of a spread out thing, but more a real sort of intense thing, because I feel that it has to have a explosion and then like an end. Like,
yeah,
maybe you can't have them twice and have them the next one be as intense, because it's, you know, like,
no, I don't know. I honestly feel like 22 through to 30 was just one long, there would be moments where I'd peep out, but a lot of that was pretty dark times.
Yeah.
But again, it was like, you know, first world problems as well. But I don't know where the anxiety comes from. I think it just comes from too much trapped energy with nowhere to go.
Yeah.
Because sometimes I'm like wondering, what is this all about? But it's actually quite joyful. Like, you know.
Yes. You can have a great time.
You're in awe of actually existing and being alive as a self-aware organism. And then other times, yeah, there's just this fear and trembling.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think then you need to just go out and do some exercise. Talk to someone who isn't your hand and be a useful member of the community.
Yeah.
But I've only learned that in the last 2 years.
Yeah. What were your answers prior to that?
What?
What were your answers? Like, what did you do?
Comedy. Comedy, and then I get high.
Yeah.
And yeah.
And what's better?
Well, comedy is a drug.
Yeah.
You get high off it.
Yeah, it's true, actually.
That's what I've realized now, you know? One of the reasons why I came back to comedy is because...
it's kind of addictive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of comedians are addicts. And I've realized that I have an addict personality, you know? And it's a rush. That's why I do comedy.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah.
So I can't remember if we finished what you were saying about what you were actually doing in the Tarkine.
Oh yeah, basically they're going to chop down the areas of Tarkine, and the Tarkine is like the longest uncut area of Gondwanan temperate rainforest. So it's been around since Australia was part of Antarctica and Gondwana land.
Wow.
And they've got similar forests in Argentina, I think.
Yeah.
And so I'm trying to work out how I can use my skills to help the conservation efforts. So I thought maybe I'd just go down there and follow some conservationists around and shoot what they're doing.
Yeah.
And try and make it into a video. And yeah, I've made a few videos about conservation stuff. So yeah, I went down there and followed these guys around, and they were like incredibly inspirational. Because I don't know, everyone always thinks that conservationists are a bunch of feral hippies,
yeah.
But they were the most capable people I've ever fucking met. They're the people who would survive the apocalypse.
Yeah,
because they know how to do stuff. And yeah. Me and my friend were just tagging along like a bunch of overgrown kids. Like, we were completely unnecessary to the tribe.
Yeah.
That's what I realized. So we just filmed them and just they just hung out with us, and we got to see the way that they did stuff. They were just doers. You know, I feel like existential dread comes to people who are dreamers or thinkers.
Yeah.
You know? But these people like, all right, this is a problem. Let's go do something about it. There was no gap between there's a problem and let's do something about it. We just stop at there's a problem. And then actually, we don't even stop at there's a problem. We stop before there's any thought.
Yeah.
And then we just sit there. So, they're really good.
Yeah, nice.
Support them.
Yeah, it's interesting that like you can be aware of like the existential dread stuff, but you know, like, you learn that you have to distract yourself with something else. So I always thought that like there would be nothing that would help, because if I knew the truth regardless, so like anything that I did on top of it, I felt like I'd be living a lie or whatever. But then like, what are you really doing? What is the life that you want to lead? Just sitting and thinking about how everything's fucked?
Yeah. It can be easy to get sucked into that, but then you also have to start balancing out with what's actually good. And you can start off small, like, so I turned 35 a week ago, so that's kind of was the trigger for my recent spiral, which was my first spiral in 2 years, which was depressing because I was like, fuck, I thought I was over this. Not so.
Yeah.
And then I had a mango and went on the trampoline and I thought, okay, things aren't that bad. Mango was good. The trampoline was fun. And this morning I woke up with pretty heavy anxiety.
About what though?
Oh, just the future.
Oh, yeah.
And then I ended up praying.
To
who? I don't know. Just I was just like, whoever's up there, just fucking help me out here, man. Like, I'm going through some stuff right now. And then it just told me to get out of bed.
Yeah.
Send some emails to some people.
Yeah.
And then I had an incredibly productive morning and it actually worked.
Yeah, wow.
So I don't know if that it was just my higher self or I don't know. Then we get into spiritual sort of speculation. But I'm going to pray every morning now.
Really?
I pray sometimes anyway, yeah. But I realized today, this morning, was actually a bit of a breakthrough. Like, oh, actually prayer is the best fight for the existential dread and the anxiety from taking over.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Do you
meditate?
Yeah. Well, I usually meditate in the morning.
Yeah.
And then recently, I think the other reason why I started falling into the dread again was because I stopped meditating and I stopped doing all my regular stuff because I've been traveling for the past month and a half. So I have no routine.
Yeah.
And then I've been trying to meditate. And then this morning I was meditating, but the anxiety was getting too much. So then I was like, fuck it, I'll just pray. So I literally just got down on my hands and knees. Yeah. and begged for some kind of redemption.
Yeah.
And it worked.
You felt better?
Yeah.
Or you felt you made some connection or?
Yeah. Well, I just got this message either from my higher self or from some, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
You know, and it just said, send an email to this person and go Facebook these people, organize this.
Yeah.
And then I was like, all right. And then I just got up and I did that. And then I was fine. Maybe up until the afternoon. I had a head of steam. And then I tried to record this podcast and it was literally 2 hours of me trying to do the same 10 minutes. And then I fell into the hole again. And that's when I messaged you about, hey, do you want to do the podcast? Yeah. Anything to get me out of this house.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah.
And now you're here.
Now I'm here.
I was freaking out because I've written a bunch of fucking really messy, confusing notes and I've kind of burnt through them all. But I feel like it's gone pretty well because I was so nervous.
Oh, you don't have to be nervous.
Now I feel now I feel okay.
Yeah.
And you've got some shit written down. I don't know if you want to mention any of that stuff.
No, this was just like in case I thought of something.
Okay, yeah.
No.
No.
I don't know. Is there anything else?
Well, I think if you want to talk about the Melbourne show.
Oh, yeah. So I'm doing a comedy show for the Melbourne Comedy Festival. You should come see it. It's pretty much about what I talked about, like burning out as a comedian, doing ayahuasca, being told to go back to find my roots and do volunteer work, being confronted with the American consumerist capitalist society and getting really apocalyptic, and then kind of waking up and then coming back here. And so I never thought I'd write a traditional show, but it's got a fucking character growth, narrative arc. But yeah, it's still being written, so it could be partly about that. I don't know.
It's going to be really good.
I think it will be. It is. It is going to be good.
No, it will be. It's already, you're already good. I don't understand what it, like, you've never recorded any album prior.
I honestly didn't feel I was ready until this year.
Really?
Yeah. Because I don't know. Yeah, I didn't feel like I was ready.
My God, it's going to be really good. Because
I think it will be.
Shit I've seen in the past week, fucking really good.
Oh,
I don't want to mention any of it because I don't want to.
No, I appreciate this. This is funny because, yeah. I think this is a comedian's fight because if you're a comedian, you think you suck all the time.
It's you really
makes,
do.
What's what I makes you better? Well,
I've got written here. I think I said, "Do you still like doing comedy?" And you answered that before.
Yeah,
but yet you still do. You ever have moments where you're like, you have a little pat on the back and you go, "Yeah, that was good."
Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Good.
Yeah. No, it's not all doom and gloom.
Because I'd never heard material that was so like, sort of, I don't know how to describe it, but it almost felt like the material was like the nearly to the point where you'd be like, this is the last show that I'd ever do. Like it was almost like this is the end. Like the material had this sense of like, what the fuck? Like what is this? What's going on? Goodbye. Like you're gonna fade away. And I was like, I hope that's just kind of the act. Like, I hope he doesn't disappear.
Yeah.
I hope this is the beginning of...
It's funny you should say that. I hope it's the beginning of something.
I'm going to call it. It should be. It will be. Yeah.
Yeah, it can... Yeah. Again, that's where the anxiety comes... Well, the future shit. But yeah, it's fine. It's fine.
thank you very much for talking to me.
Hey, thanks. Thanks for having me.